this topic of tonight is really so relevant and so important, getting rid of your church baggage, because we live in an era where almost all people have a lot of church baggage, even people that still attend a traditional kind of church, even people like you that sit here that give church one or two more chances. We all have church baggage, and it's become highly, highly fashionable to criticize spiritual communities and to criticize all kinds of churches, whether it be house churches, or whether it be churches like this at Dialoog, or whether it be something like Moreletsa Park, Inge Kerk, or you know, or whatever. But here's the big problem. There are several apparent reasons that people like to criticize church. The church has been in many respects morally flawed. It has been the discussion. I think you can put the first one up for us, Andrew, the first point there. I'm just going to the next one. And the next one. There we are. The church had been, right through the centuries, a point of discussion in terms of lacking morality many, many times, as the organization that actually needs to have that and was supposed to have that. A second thing is the church very frequently had been missing the mission, missing God's mark. In other words, churches are being criticized today just for having been distracted from the main purpose and the main goal that God put out there for the church, namely to reach people, to love your enemies, to serve the people outside of the church community, to really be the church as Christ intended to be. And these were all reasons for criticizing the church. Hurtful experiences. A lot of people that have been in churches were hurt by the church, hurt by the typical kind of brokenness of the church, and many in many cases, it was partly their own fault, partly the church's fault. But some people just give up. Say, you know what? I've been there, done that, bought a T-shirt. I've tried it. You know, it's not worth pursuing this. It's not worth going on. I'm going to do church on my own, or I'm just going to give up on the whole church idea. I'll still love God, and if that's not an option, you know, I'll just turn my back on faith altogether. And then, of course, in many churches, we have some deadness and lovelessness. Now, of course, this is not true of all churches. I mean, we all know great churches, right? I mean, churches that do great work and that really get it right. I've been called to such a church. And a lot of what is going on, just feel like when you walk into some churches, there's just a deadness, you know, and it just feels as though it's the same kind of feeling you get when you just walk in where a guy and a girl just broke up. You know, you don't really know what's going on. You just know you don't want to be here. You know, it's just weird. And and some churches feel like that. You know, there's a constant kind of feeling or vibe of you know, darkness or being tense or whatever. It just feels weird. And neurologically speaking, of course, it's very interesting. They found out now that actually the wavelength that comes from your brain can actually connect to some environments and just do not connect to some other environments. And we really picked that up very, very quickly. And then we have the judgmentalism that we have in churches that we all know of. I didn't even put some quotes on, because we've done that here at Dialoog. We've put several quotes on, you know, people criticizing church and so forth and so on. But we all know that. So I'm going to really, really just dive into the whole idea of how do we deal with church baggage. Before we do, the first one is all this baggage that a lot of us have accumulated is in a very real sense emotional. So it's intense. We feel very strongly about what we've experienced. We feel very strongly about the church, getting it right or not getting it right. We feel very strongly that I'm not going to put my foot in another church, or at least in a traditional kind of church, or in a denominational kind of church. And so this becomes sort of the lens through which we view the gospel. It becomes sort of the lens through which we read the Bible and experience church in general. And that impacts us in a tremendous way. And that's what we mean That's what we talk about. We need to talk about church baggage. We need to talk about this because this impacts the way we are being church and supposed to be church, even though we don't like the idea of church frequently, or a lot of the, in a lot of the cases, is we still need to be the church if we're followers of Christ. But how do we do that? The way we feel and the experiences we've had impact the way that we are trying to be church or supposed to be church. Anyway, so how do I get over my church baggage? How do I assimilate my experiences and process them in such a way that I can get out on the other side a healthy person, a hopeful person when it comes to the mission of Jesus in this world? And that's extremely important. So the first thing is just very, very brief one. This is not rocket science. Just realize that frustration with church is nothing new. It's really not anything new. Paul had it in 1 Corinthians. I'm just going to read to you. I mean, you can read just almost any chapter from that book and you'll see Paul's frustration with the church. But here in chapter 3, you see Paul is saying, "Brothers and sisters, I could not address you as people who live by the Spirit, as people who are still worldly, mere infants in Christ. I gave you milk, not solid food, for you were not yet ready for it. Indeed, you are still not ready. You are still worldly. For since there is jealousy and quarreling among you, are you not worldly? Are you not acting like mere humans? For when one says, 'I follow Paul,' and another, 'I follow Apollos,' are you not mere human beings?" What's interesting is that Paul had severe problems with the Corinthian church. They were being biased against one another. There was a lack of unity. There was a lot of arrogance. They displayed the gifts in a completely loveless way. They were immoral. Some people slept with their mother-in-laws. Look at chapter 5. One guy specifically. I don't think it was a general kind of thing. Hopefully not. But in such a way that the Greeks had a way of talking about being immoral. There's this Greek word, korinthiasestai, which is a passive verb that indicates that if you are a really, really, really immoral person in the ancient times, that they would just call you a Corinthian, whether you come from Corinthians or not, or Corinth or not. That's the way that the people went about. Now they came to faith in this church, and they carried some of this immorality into the church. And it was horrible. I mean, if you look at the things that Paul addresses them, they were suing one another. They came together on Sundays, they sang together, they used all their gifts, they spoke in tongues, they preached, they prophesied, they did a lot of things. And Paul was just saying, "Guys, this is not on." Now, what's interesting is, he doesn't tell them, "Listen, find another church." He tries to fix what's wrong in this church. Now, we'll get to that later on. But just one more remark. Nietzsche, and of course, he's a church outsider. He severely criticized the pietism of his day, but he said, "I would believe in their salvation," talking about Christians, if they looked a little more like people who have been saved. That really is one of my big things as well about church, even where I'm at Oosterloch at the moment. And I really love it there. There's a lot of exciting things going on. But it's just interesting to me, in many churches where you come, people just don't look like they've been saved. And that's one of the reasons I think we don't really attract a lot more people. Okay, so that's just the first very, it's kind of a no-brainer, frustration with church is nothing new. So don't feel too sorry for yourself. And don't feel too sorry for people that have been hurt by the church. They weren't the first people who were hurt. Paul was hurt, by the way, by this Corinthian church. Just read the second letter to the Corinthians, the letter of tears. The kind of conflict that Paul had with the Corinthian church, I mean, let me tell you, is nothing like any kind of trouble you will find in any church that I know of. It was really, really tragic. And Paul never writes them off. He writes back to them. He reprimands them. He rebukes them. And he uses all kinds of diverse styles within that one letter of 2 Corinthians. And there was a lot of hurtful things said between Paul and the church and amongst the church members, but never does Paul write them off. He just keeps the relationship going. Oh, and by the way, it seems from church history that as the years went on, things got a lot better between Paul and the Corinthian church. He wanted to visit them for a third time. We're not sure whether he did, but things in the end really picked up. So, but the second thing, how do I get over my church baggage? The second one is, expect more trouble in church than in secular spaces. Listen to what I'm not saying. I'm not saying expect at least the same amount of trouble than you get in the business or in the secular world or in families. You should expect more trouble. Why should that be the case? If we look at the message of the gospel, you could just show us the next one, Andrew. All welcome, sinners, the weary, the legalistic, the sick, the poor, the selfish. That's Jesus' message, right? All are welcome. Criminals are welcome. Immoral people are welcome. What do you do when they come? Hopefully some of them will come to Christ, but it will be a process. And even if they do come to Christ, some of them, the process of following Christ and become as moral as He is and become holy as He is will take a process, and you will have to deal with that kind of people inside the church. Now, why did I say you're going to have more trouble in the church than outside? Here's why. The church is by definition the institution that not only welcomes sinners, but confronts the sin in people. What happens when that becomes a reality? The darkness within me comes to the surface, and I react to this confrontation, whether subconsciously or consciously, and you can have war in such a place. Because the church is by definition the place where evil is confronted, where it's not it's not fine to go in a certain way, and we need to confront one another. Eugene Peterson has this great quote. He says, "When Christian believers gather in churches, everything that can go wrong sooner or later does. Outsiders, on observing this, conclude that there is nothing to the church business except perhaps business, and dishonest business at that. Insiders see it differently. Just as a hospital collects the sick under one roof and labels it as such, the church collects sinners. Many of the people outside the hospital are every bit as sick as the ones inside, but their illnesses are still either undiagnosed or disguised. It's similar with sinners outside the church. So Christian churches are not, as a rule, model communities of good behavior. They are rather places where human misbehavior is brought out into the open, faced, and dealt with." And that last sentence, where human misbehavior is brought out into the open, faced, and dealt with, that's what I mean. It's that process that I'm talking about. It's that process of confronting and lovingly guiding people to a better kind of life, a better way of living, the way of the road, the hodos. The first Christians were called people of the road in Acts, actually in Luke as well. They live differently. So if you want to challenge your fellow believers to live differently, or even non-believers to accept Christ into a new life, you confront the darkness within people. And when that comes to the forefront within you, when that comes to the surface, you have a few choices. You may, if you're a really mature person, you'll acknowledge your own sinfulness and brokenness. But guess what? Not all of us are mature. So if you're just a little immature, you will project this darkness on the church or on church leadership or on people around you, and there will be a lot of conflict. You will project that on your cell group or the cell group leader or someone who talks too much in a cell group or whatever, and there will arise conflict, because the church is by definition the institution, the body that deals with the darkness in people, in ourselves. That's why there should be more trouble in a church than in secular spaces. Now, this of course does not mean that the church leadership, if the leadership of this church is mature and they have character and they are competent, they would handle this conflict in a in a mature way and in a constructive way, but that does not mean things will always be great and feel great. The process of becoming holy is a messy, messy, messy process. And I would like to say that I think that the churches that do this greatly, making disciples of people, you may get the most messiness within those churches. So we should expect trouble. That's just one of the other ways that you can really deal with your church baggage. A third one is see a therapist. Now I do mean this in a little way as well, but it can be a metaphor. If you stay angry at a church for 10 years, you need a therapist. Okay? You're not supposed as a follower of Jesus to be angry at anyone for a long time. The Psalms, if you read through the Psalms, it's great if you read Walter Brueggemann on the Psalms. He says the Psalms help us, that anger Psalms, the one where like Psalm 58, where David prays against his enemies, Lord, smite them, you know, just wipe them out. That's not a permanent condition. That's a way of dealing with your own hurt, that you go to God with your hurt, you utter it in prayer so that God can start healing your insides, get you through the cross and the resurrection so that you could really forgive. If you are frustrated with church for so long, and if you are angry at the church for so long, really, go and see someone, because you need to process that anger. And anyone who is angry at any other person, that stays angry at that person for a few months or a few years or whatever, you need help. That's not a healthy way of dealing with this. And here's the thing. If you do not deal with that, the emotional pain within you distorts your picture of reality. That's what it does. That's why we need to deal with it. That's why Christian therapists or therapists in general are important in the kingdom of God. Because if you do not deal with that, your pain becomes the brush with which you paint all churches, the way you see churches, the way you see fellow believers, the way you see human beings. Or it's like going through divorce. And the woman would say, or the guy would say, woman, never again, I'm finished with woman. Well, listen, you see woman through the distorted lens of your own pain. That's why you say that. Or, you know, men, I'll never trust a man again. You know, it's good to be wary. But you see them through the lens of your pain. And if you don't deal with that, you're going to go on through life with a distorted picture of reality. And that's why you need to deal with this. Go to God, forgive these people, lay it out before Him. And what I very frequently suggest to people who go through things of unforgiveness or pain, and I mean, you wouldn't believe like how many people walk around with this. People I don't even expect it from, people that I consider to be really mature people in Christ. And there will happen something within their lives, or they will arise from conflict or whatever. And I would sit with this person, and then it really comes out that she hasn't forgiven her father for something, you know, or hadn't forgiven her uncle or someone at work of 10 years ago, and that becomes a stumbling block in their own spiritual growth and maturity. So when I say see a therapist, it's partly metaphorical, but it can be very literal as well. The next one, determine, is it a flawed church or a flawed you that's the problem? This is very important, because the Christian gospel is introspective. We're looking to the outside in terms of our mission, but inside in terms of where the problem lies. We are people who say, you know what, there's a problem here, and it might be me. Now, since I've started Reimsach in 2001, I've started dealing, connecting, interacting with people, a lot of people that are churched allergic, you know, they're allergic to church people, or they're allergic to church life, or they, you know, they've been hurt and so forth and so on. And you'd frequently encounter little groups of people that they have the small, you know, they have the small circle of friends, and they do church on their own. And when you encounter them, frequently, not always, frequently, you will see you know, I can really understand why these people don't go back to church, because they are very difficult people to live with. They really, they have the incapacity to deal with trouble. They're actually very immature themselves. They don't have the capacity to deal with messiness. They don't have the capacity to rub shoulders and live alongside fellow Christians, fellow believers with whom they disagree. And we've said this frequently at Hadialuch, that one of the characteristics of a healthy church is diversity. In other words, that here can be a lot of believers together, and Christ and Christ resurrected are the one that binds us together. And we have opinions based on the Bible, each and every one of us. That's fine. But we can live with a fellow brother or the fellow sister with whom we severely disagree on certain issues. That's characteristic of a healthy church. And just make sure, because that's what we usually tend to do, is when we haven't really dealt with the whole idea of church, and it's we project our own guilt on other people, on that church leader. That guy really hurt me, or that dermony, or that pastor really hurt me, or that church is really incomplete, you know, and that they've disillusioned me, you know. And be careful, you are on very thin ice personally if that's your attitude. You need to deal with that in a mature way. Be then more mature than the church you're blaming. And deal with your own guilt in a proper way, but make sure that as it's reality that we will always have to deal with broken churches. It doesn't matter where you go, you will always need to deal with a broken church. Some will be better than others, I'm sure, but you will always need to deal with a broken church. And one of the ways that you deal with it is don't blame that church for everything. Expect messiness. So when that comes up, first ask yourself, what can I do about this? To whom can I go and say, listen, I'm sorry for my part of this whole thing that happened. So it's determined whether it was really a church that is flawed, or whether the problem doesn't really lie with you. Next one, realize that attending church is necessary for your discipleship and the reaching of the world. Doesn't matter how broken the church is, you still need it. And here's why. And here at Dialuach, we've said that frequently, that God's purpose with us is not to make us comfortable. It's to make us holy. That means His only interest in us, besides the relational interest, that He wants to pursue a relationship with us, ongoing deepening relationship, is that He wants our character to develop. Now, here's the thing. Your character does not develop in comfort. There's this great TED talk that I just looked the other day. It's Bill something, but the title of the talk is Comfort Will Ruin Your Life. And he had this few circles. He said, we have this static kind of circle. Don't go to environment like that, because there you will stagnate. Actually, it's a circle, not static, but stagnate. You will stagnate there. It's not even really a safe environment. It's really toxic, but you wouldn't really grow there. Don't go there. Then the opposite pole, you have chaos. You know, you wouldn't like to go there either, because chaos, he equates with things like, you know, tsunamis, destroying a beach or a village or whatever, and that's really chaotic. You cannot really predict or control any of it. It's only destruction. And then there's the third circle, again on the side of the stagnant circle, but the second one is order. Now, order is the one that we usually choose for. That's usually the choice that you make. But here's the interesting thing: that Bill, what's his name, says that you're not going to grow in order either. Because it's too predictable. When you do a certain thing, there will be a predictable outcome. That's also not the place where you grow maximally. And then he's got the fourth circle, and that's the one he wants to get at, and that's complexity. That's the one where you grow. Complexity is the space in which you grow. Things are not easy. You have to think things through. You have to challenge your own character. You have to challenge yourself. You have to do all kinds of things to really assimilate all these this messiness and whatever. That's the point where you grow. And that I think, is one of the reasons that Paul does not give up on the Corinthian church, because they represent complexity. And he says, listen, stop your nonsense, but grow. And that's why a country like South Africa, with all its complexity and nonsense, is one of the best places you can grow. But what the country will do to you is you'll either become bitter or it'll make you mature. And it's the same with the church. People have often, during my vocation as a pastor, would come to me and say, you know, I don't like small groups anymore because Tani Sari talks too much, you know. Or Peter, you know, just talks too much. Not you, Peter. You know, some kind of other hypothetical Peter, you know. would talk too much. And I've given up on small groups. And I would just send him right back and said, listen, you need Peter. You go back. Because you need to become more tolerant. You need to become more patient. How do you think you're going to learn patience if you're not being thrown into complexity? You do not learn to forgive and love and be tolerant and be patient and long-suffering in a space of comfort. You don't learn that there. You learn that in a space of complexity. This one guy, he's a German gentleman that used to work with disabled children. And people would often ask him, why do you do it? What's the meaning in what you do? And for years and years, he couldn't really say what the meaning was. I mean, except that he felt that it was a good thing to do. And then he started asking some of his own staff members, you know, as the time went by, you know, year after year after year, why they do this work. Why do they choose to give up great positions to come and work with disabled people? And here are just some of these responses. People would say, for the first time, I feel I'm doing something really significant. Others would say, I've won the affection of Sabina. I no longer think of her as disabled. Some other people would say, it aroused in me the desire to help. Some other people say, it's made me question what is really important in life. Or, work has new meaning and purpose. I feel I'm needed. Or, I've learned to be patient and to appreciate even the slightest sign of progress. Because there's a little of it, right? Or, I've discovered myself, some people said. Yet again, others have said, I've become tolerant. My own little problems don't seem so important anymore. Or lastly, I've learned to appreciate the little pleasures of life, and especially I thank God that He has shown me that love can achieve more than hate or force. That's the result of working with disabled people. And I'm saying this with great piety and great sensitivity towards a disabled person, but in many respects, churches are disabled. We are disabled. That's what the whole sinful nature of man really means. In many respects, we are disabled. And if we have the right attitude, the right mindset, when we work with ourselves and with one another and allow God to work in us, some of us will eventually be able to say the same kind of things. You know, it made me realize that I can celebrate the smallest sign of progress. But then how do I get over my church baggage? The very last one. Make a healthy choice, that's for a church, in deciding in which church you want to join. And then support your local church no matter what. In the end, God will get us there. That's His promise. Now what I mean by that is, I think it is important what church you join. And I think the things that you should consider in deciding to join a church should be things like, What do they believe about the Trinity? What do they believe about Jesus? And one or two more doctrinal things, but don't go too far in the doctrinal things, because take the basic ones, the one that we feel the ones that we feel are right in the center of Christian theology. And then the second thing is, you ask yourselves, do I trust this leadership in terms of their character and their competency? Do I trust them? In other words, they may be flawed. By trusting them, I put them on a pedestal. I do not mean that I bestow on them some kind of human honor that they, you know, shouldn't get or whatever. I do not mean anything other than just, you know, in general, in principle, I trust them. And even they may fall morally sometime in the future. If that may happen, I will be there to support them and I will pick them up. Because here's the important thing. Let me use marriage as an example. One of the greatest things that make you grow in marriage is this: sticking with one another. Not bailing, not giving up, although it's hard. Now, I'm not saying if the relationship is really, and I mean honestly, literally destructive, and some of you are going to die sometime in this marriage, you know, yes, get out. Okay? But that's not what we're talking about. Don't bail out when life becomes hard. Because the fact that there's no back door open is what makes man and woman creative within their marriage to just solve this thing, no matter what. In that tension, there is introduced a kind of a creative power when you realize we are here in each other's company for life. We cannot go anywhere. But once you have in your mind made open a back door, you will use that back door sometime, and there's a lot of growth and a lot of creativity and a lot of goodness that you're going to miss out on because you haven't stuck in the relationship. Same is true of a church. If you want to grow in a maximum way and make maximum impact, stay with the people you love in church. And listen, you all know, your family is frequently the most difficult people you have to live with, right? I mean, we all have uncles and nephews and nieces and, you know, things that are, you know, and people that are just, they're just hard to live with. But that's what makes you mature. And that's also what makes the relationship valuable. In the end of some time of enduring some hardship together, you can actually grow closer. And that's just so important. And then in the end, God promises us that He will get us there. This one guy, he's a pastor, but he helps out in a high school, Earl Palmer. Each year, he makes the students in the music class perform Beethoven's ninth symphony. And when people ask him about, you know, why do you do this to the poor kids, he says this. You see, one multipass high school orchestra attempts Beethoven's ninth symphony. The result is appalling. I wouldn't be surprised if the performance made old Ludwig roll over in his grave despite his deafness. You might ask, why bother? Why inflict on those poor kids the terrible burden of trying to render what the immortal Beethoven had in mind? Not even the great Chicago Symphony Orchestra can attain that perfection. My answer is this: the Multipass High School Orchestra will give some people in that audience their only encounter with Beethoven, with Beethoven's great ninth. Far from perfection, it is nevertheless the only way they will ever hear Beethoven's message. Now, when it comes to art, some of you might disagree. No, you know, rather give him nothing, you know. And we've all heard, you know, some kind of presentations like that. But the idea here is that what Beethoven had to offer is so precious. You know, even if someone just catches a little bit of that, that's worth it. And then in J.F. Power's novel, Wheat That Springeth Green, there's this, and he usually uses his novels as a kind of an analogy of what happens in the Catholic Church. He says the following: there's the scene where the one character talks to the other one. This is the big old, so he's talking about this, one of those big old, you know, 17th century sail ships, okay? This is a big old ship, Bill. She creaks, she rocks, she rolls, and at times she makes you want to throw up. But she gets you where she's going. She always has, always will, until the end of time, with or without you. And I think that's Jesus' message when it comes to the church. That's the way He sees His church. Yeah, this thing is big, and it's perhaps not completely in every detail what Christ what Christ, you know, planned or wanted for the church in every respect, you know, and it rolls around and it makes you get sick and you throw up over the side, you know, and you know, it's just not always a pleasant journey. But in the end, it gets you where you need to be. And it gets you where God wants you. And that would just be sort of my goodbye message this evening is, people, God is very serious about what He's asked of us. He gave His life for this thing called church, called having relationships, firstly with Him and with one another. He died for this. Read Ephesians 2. He did not just die to save us from hell to heaven. He died to save us into new relationships as well. And this is very serious. And my challenge tonight would just be that you would not allow your church baggage or any other person's church baggage to cloud your idea of where God is going with His church. And not all churches are worth attending. Not all churches are worth, you know, joining. But make your choice carefully. And of course, you know, hopefully you will stay here at Dialuah. That'll be a great thing. But even if you don't, if you go somewhere else, we're not going to be, you know, we're not going to take it personally. Well, perhaps you're honorable, but I won't, you know, since I'm not going to be here anyway. But really take church seriously. Not for the sake of the church itself, but because of Christ and because of the price that He paid to have a relationship and to pursue a relationship with each and every one of us. And of course, I mean, Johan, you know, makes this very melodramatic tonight. You know, I'm leaving, but I'm not really leaving. You know, I'm just, you know, sort of stopping my employee relationship with Dialuah. But I mean, you know, I stay a friend of the community. Hopefully, I will be asked back to do talks here and there. And I will still have contact with a lot of you. But whatever the case may be, if perhaps we will never see each other again by some kind of, you know, weird circumstance, stick on the road. Christianity is a spirituality of the road. Stay on the road. Walk behind Jesus. Walk in His footsteps. And when you get distracted and by the wayside and you go off somewhere into the thick bushes, you know, just get back through grace and stick on the road and give yourself to the church, because in doing that, Christ's attitude is, you're doing that for Him. And you're doing that for which He gave His life. He did not just give His life for you as an individual. He did. But He gave it for the church as a community. So that we would not give up. Even if we may, metaphorically speaking, experience the cross and the messiness of the cross with one another. Let's stick together. Let's sit on the retirement home's patio one day. You know, swatting flies and talking about what we've done, what God has done in us and through us, and talk about our grandchildren. Let's stick with one another, because that's what Christ died for. So let me pray for us, and then we can have some time of Q&A. Lord Jesus, again, we thank You. I want to personally thank You for the past 6 years, almost 7 years, that You've used Dialuah to shape my character and to shape me. Thank You for these friends. Thank You for bringing them into my life. And thank You for Johan, especially my friend, and the one that You used to shape me as well. And we know that our relationship would not end tonight. And we want to ask You that You would still use us as a community into one another's lives. And Lord, I want to especially pray for people tonight that, and maybe it's not really a thing for a lot of us, but maybe some of us would sit here tonight with that has been disillusioned by the church and been hurt by the church. And rightfully, we sit with a lot of pain or just frustration at least, and even anger. Thank You that we know that You understand that and that You meet us right where we are. But thank You that we also know that You wouldn't like to leave us where we are, but You would like to guide us. You would like to take our hand and walk alongside us and take us into a better future. And even though the church, Lord Jesus, we know is might sometimes be in peril, Your kingdom is never in trouble. And help us as a church to keep focus on Your kingdom. Help us to walk behind You. Help us to honor You as the living Christ, as the resurrected Christ, the divine man that came to live amongst us, to be one of us, to show us how to live, how to treat our fellow human beings, how to treat our enemies, and how to live. Thank you for showing us a new reality, the reality of God, the reality of a kingdom that's busy forming and busy coming in this messy and dark world of ours. So help us to shine the light, Lord, and bring us to the point of forgiveness where we would forgive the church and forgive the people around us. Help us to live new lives and to experience the healing and the power of your restoration. And we ask that because of you and for your sake. And everybody says, amen. Cool. All right. So anybody that wants to disagree, for all time's sake, tonight's your opportunity. Or ask questions, anything, anyone.
Maybe just to get us started, you once, well, recently told me that what helped you to get over your church baggage was evangelism. So maybe you can maybe just share what you meant by that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for that. I wouldn't have remembered that. I severely criticized the church for a long time in my life. And I mean, up until, you know, in 2000, around about 2000, 2001, I really started engaging with relationships with non-believing people a whole lot. And God started using non-believing folks to really shape my life and shape my spirituality and give me new meaning in terms of how He really loves us, how deeply He loves us. But up until that point, I always sort of thought that it was the churchiness of church that make Christians so stuck up, you know, and make them so rigid and so legalistic in their approach towards other people. But the good thing that non-believing people taught me is, fortunately, they're exactly the same. Non-believing people can be just as stubborn and hard-hearted and as any kind of church people. So it's not churches that are rigid or stuck up or legalistic or difficult people to get along with. It's a human thing. It's not a church thing. And that really saved my view of the church. It didn't really save my view of, you know, humans, which include myself, obviously, and my view of myself. But it really made me realize that it's not a church thing. If you grew up in church and church has become a disillusionment to you, that's very easy to make that assumption. You know, it's typical church. I've got good news for you, or bad news, you know, depending on how you see it. It's not a church thing. It's a human thing. I've got non-believing friends, good friends of mine. They are more, difficult to live with than many of the church people that I know. But we need to love them. And they still do a lot for me. God still uses them to shape me, to shape my character. But thanks, Jan. I think that's what you meant by your question. Anyone else?
Hello. Thank you, Rudolf. What do you do when you, as a person, encounter a character fault in yourself? How do you go about to deal with it?
Thank you. And that's such a relevant question because there's two things that the church provided for me. First of all the holes in my body, or the wounds in my body, most of them come from church people. All right, so they shot me to shreds. But the second thing is they helped me to understand myself. And they helped me to really see the flaws within my own character. They helped me to see that although I don't view myself that way, I am being experienced as sometimes being very stubborn, throwing my toys out of the cot when I don't get my way, and just, you know, hard-headed. And that helped me realize that there's a humility that I should really try to pursue. There are such a lot of ways that the church helped me to understand that I have flaws. Now, your question is, how do I deal with that? Well, with humility, I hope. Don't react when people show you on your, you know, when people show you your fault. That's one thing I actually learned when I was at Dreamsach, is is when people, we had a very transparent culture. As a matter of fact, where I am at Oosterlich, it's part of the culture that I'm creating amongst us as pastors as well. We evaluate each other's sermons every Tuesday morning. There's this whole thing of, you can do what you want on a Sunday, but Tuesday is coming. You know, we're gonna evaluate you. And it's first of all not a competency thing that we evaluate, but a character thing. How did your character come through in how you spoke? How did your character come through in your planning? How do we experience you as a person? And we show each other, we know we love one another, so it's a complete context of grace and being transparent. But when you encounter a flaw within yourself, encounter it with humility. Don't react immediately. When people show you your fault, don't utter an opposing argument immediately. Sleep over it. Do not react immediately, because you're going to react more out of defensiveness and emotion than you're going to do, except if you're really very, very mature, and there are very few of us. So sleep over it, think about it, and receive it with the openness of understanding that I am a sinful person. So yes, they might actually be right. And then when you realize that they are right, go back to them and acknowledge that. I know you're right. I've asked God for forgiveness. Will you help me, and will you keep me accountable to really conquer this thing, because I'm weak at this point? So hopefully you handle it with humility, with honesty, and with accountability. People are so touchy these days. You can't tell anybody anything, you know, and they react and they are hurtful and they're going to cry now. And it's, you know, pull up your pants. This is a church, not a creche, you know. Stop feeling sorry for yourself and pursue your own spiritual growth severely. Pursue it. Don't resist it. If they are wrong, if you really have prayed about it and they are wrong, you know, pray about it for at least a month or two before you tell them that you actually disagree. I don't know. I hope that helps. It's very simple and brief. We can also obviously talk a lot about that, but that's the best I can do right now. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
But also, you seem to present the church people as a victim of sorts in this situation, in the sense that almost they can't help themselves. You know, that's what humans are like. Okay. Now, so when Jesus came to earth and his original plan with his people, the Jews, and when Jesus was on earth, he certainly had some very colorful things to say to the Pharisees, and much of it in the context of, you were supposed to be the light of the world in this nation, and you messed this up nicely, you know, other geslacht, and via the Pharisees, and all these things. Why would the Christians not be, or sort of the church people, not be self to come geskeer as the Pharisees in this context?
No, I think they should be. The angle that I've from which I've approached this tonight is from an individual angle. In other words, how do you, as a disillusioned, hurt human being, react towards the church? If you would follow me around as I preach to churches, I'm in Matthew 23, where Jesus, you know, the religious elites of his day were the only people that Jesus ever judged, right? So would you say, John is extremely important. But that was not my purpose tonight, because I think the angle that I wanted to pursue tonight is, it's too easy to blame the church. And you're completely correct. We should correct the church. We should pursue helping them to grow. But I try to approach that from an individual angle. First, look to the inside. And then when you've done that and you've gone through a process, please, you know, engage in a church, be a prophetic voice. You know, show them what Jesus has shown the Pharisees, because I think the message to the Pharisees is a very important message, and you're completely correct. Right in the history of Israel, you can just read Hosea and Amos, the same kind of judgment, for instance, in Amos, that the Israelites expected to come upon all the nations around them. God said it's going to happen to you as well. Now, so you're completely incorrect, and I did not exclude that in my mind, but I tried to do a specific approach tonight. just to approach it from a more individual pastoral kind of perspective. I hope that makes sense, but you're completely right. What I've presented tonight is not the whole truth. It's just a part, but I think it's a very important part. Thank you for your comment.